The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Are you looking for more customers for your business? Are you facing new competitors, not just across town, but across the country? How about across borders? How about worldwide? Welcome to Global Reach with your host, Tay Revez. As new technology makes it easier to connect with your customers, it also makes it easier for international competitors to reach them. Our program will help you stay competitive in a tough marketplace. Now, here's your host, Tay Revez.
Hi, this is Tay Revez. Welcome back to Global Reach, the show for companies doing business internationally or trying to protect their home turf from foreign competitors. This week we look at how China's industrial policies, in particular its support for state-owned industries and forced technology transfer from foreign investors, and its protection of critical minerals, how all that is impacting the U.S. economy, manufacturers, and jobs. Our guests include three incredible people: Roger Chagrin of Chagrin Associates, a dynamic trade lawyer; Tom Conway, International Vice President for the U.S. Steelworkers; and Timothy Brightbill of Wiley-Rhine, who's also a specialist in international trade and represents the Coalition for American Solar Manufacturing. We're going to talk about how China's subsidies to its manufacturers hurt not only core U.S. industries such as steel, but the industries that are expected to generate growth and jobs in the future, like green energy. We'll look at why for 20 years the U.S. has done so little to protect American business and jobs, or even to pursue remedies that are available to it under treaties and domestic laws. Finally, we're going to look what business and labor and you can do to get the Congress and the administration to take action. As I said, I've got three terrific guests this week. Roger Chagrin is the president of Chagrin Associates. It's an international trade and lobby firm located in Washington, D.C. For over two decades, Roger has represented an array of U.S. manufacturers with a concentration in the metals industry. And this is on matters related to trade and competition. He successfully obtained relief for clients who were impacted by unfair trade practices. In addition, Chagrin Associates has successfully advocated for clients before federal agencies and the U.S. Congress, resulting in the enactment of trade legislation. Tom Conway has served as International Vice President at the U.S. Steelworkers, United Steelworkers, since 2005. Starting as a steelworker, he spent much of his career focusing on the steel industry and in the U.S. and has been involved in most of the major collective bargaining efforts within that industry. His responsibilities include developing bargaining strategy as well as directing the USW's work in the Alliance for American Manufacturing and relating trade and legislative efforts at the federal and state level. Tom focuses much of his activities on trade matters across the union and has played a key role in the USW's 421 tire case of 2009. That resulted in tariffs on subsidized and dumped Chinese imports. He works jointly with the domestic steel industry and has worked for steel tariffs and to help save many domestic producers from bankruptcy and liquidation. Timothy Brightbill represents clients on all aspects of international trade law and policy. A partner for Wiley-Rhine, his work includes import trade remedies such as anti-dumping laws, countervailing duty and safeguard investigations, global trade policy, and trade negotiations. He works on international arbitration, export controls, and climate change policy. Chambers U.S., an international law directory, has named Mr. Brightbill one of the nation's up-and-coming practitioners in international trade law, noting that he stands out as an incredibly impressive nuts-and-bolt lawyer. So what I'd first like to do is have each of our guests talk about this, to lay out the case whether China is, in fact, waging a trade war against the U.S. and other industrial companies. How are they doing it, and what have been the impacts? Roger, why don't you start?
Well, thank you, Ms. Revez. This is a good
time
for this show because of the fact that this week China just celebrated its 10th anniversary of joining the WTO. And I think it's a good time to look at what has happened to the trading relationship between the United States, the rest of the world, and China over the last 10 years and see who benefited from us giving China most favored nation treatment and who lost. Well, the clear beneficiaries of China joining the WTO and then not actually living up to any of their WTO commitments was the Chinese Communist Party, which was able to solidify their power and grow the economy and the army and the strength of the Chinese economy. The trade representatives who negotiated this horrible deal, who now get free advertising in the China Daily. It comes in my Wall Street Journal and New York Times and advertises that you can hire them to help you invest in China or help the Chinese invest in the United States. U.S. multinationals who have moved not dozens but hundreds of plants from the United States to China in order to get lower wages and get Chinese subsidies and avoid the cost of environmental regulations. And finally, the big box retailers. We shouldn't forget that 10 years ago, you could walk into a big box retailer and find American goods on their shelves. They've moved all their purchasing to China, and now at least in the big box retailers, when I go in, virtually 90 to 100% of their goods are from China. Who suffered? It's been American workers.
Okay. Just for our listeners, the World Trade Organization is WTO, and it deals with the global rules of trade between nations. Its main functions are to ensure that trade flows as smoothly, predictably, and as freely as possible. And when companies join it, they undertake certain obligations. When China joined, it undertook an awful lot of obligations, and we're going to talk a little more about that later. Let me turn to Tom. From your perspective, from the United Steelworkers' perspective.
Well,
is China waging a trade war against the U.S.?
Ours actually is not much different from Roger's. We don't think our government has stepped up at all to the plate in dealing with China and in dealing with the way China has just sort of systematically ignored its obligations under the World Trade Organization and under its ascension agreements. And we think when you just look at the imbalance in trade, and, you know, today I read something that USTR Kirk had put out about China's continued failure to do it and said, well, we export $90 billion worth of some goods, but our imbalance, China continues to ship in here nearly $275-280 billion worth of goods year after year after year after year. And so when trade is supposed to be a balance, we are completely out of balance with China. They continue to manipulate their currency. We continue to do nothing about it. And so these series of trade cases, the series of enforcements that we're doing as best we can under really woefully drafted laws are really the only fight back that's going on in this. And I think the nation instinctively knows it's wrong. We've done a lot of polling in this country, and 90% of Americans do not like this arrangement, and they don't think it's healthy for this country not to make things and manufacture things and to have manufacturing as an underpinning of our economy. And we have acceded that to China, and it's something we need to change and reverse.
USTR's U.S. Trade Representative.
Right.
Tim, you've brought actions before the USTR, haven't you? I know you're working in the steel area, but you've also worked in green energy.
In a lot of areas, and the steel workers have been involved in 35 either investigations or reviews or individual cases at China and at other nations, but on China and on steel, on China on renewable energy, on China on a surge of tires that, you know, put five or six U.S. tire plants out of business here. But our hemorrhage of jobs to China can't be ignored. And it's not something that American workers or American companies ought to tolerate, but a lot of these companies find themselves doing business there, find themselves threatened and beholden to the Chinese government. In the hopes of selling a product in China that many of them, it never materializes for them. They get forced to move their technology. They don't get the same sort of treatment that a Chinese company gets, or the same sort of subsidization. And it's just been a bad deal for American business, and they need to open their eyes about it.
Do Chinese companies get the same treatment as U.S. companies do here?
Chinese companies here get treated no differently than any other company, and I think that's something that America needs to be very careful about, because as Chinese state-owned entities begin to expand and begin to move into the United States and want to buy our assets now, we need to recognize that this is the Chinese government coming to do this.
Do you want to define
what you mean? Businessmen.
Define what you mean by state-owned entities and what
a government-owned, you know, China owns many of its businesses, many of its industries are government-owned. It is a communist-based, centrally controlled government, either in at the federal level, their national level, or their provincial level. But those businesses are owned by the nation of China, not by XYZ Corporation. And so when that state-owned entity moves into the United States and wants to buy or build a steel plant or a tire plant or an auto plant or any business that's out there, people need to have their eyes open that that entity is the government of China. And with all the power that a government money has behind it, all the subsidization, and so how will you compete against that sort of an entity? And I don't know that we've had that discussion in this country the way we need to.
Roger, we're going to break in a minute, but before we go, you made a comment that China's subsidy of its steel industry doesn't just impact steel, but goes across the board. Do you want to mention that? Just take 1 minute to discuss it?
Well, as Tom pointed out, you know, what's amazing is that the government of China literally owns and controls companies that represent 60% of its total GDP. In the steel industry, the government of China, by law, forbids any foreign company from operating a steel mill in the country of China. So they own 100% of their steel industry.
And how does that impact other companies?
Well, what that does is they push steel downstream, both within China and to producers in other countries, so that U.S. consumers of steel are starting at a disadvantage their Chinese competitors, because their Chinese competitors are buying steel at a government-subsidized price. And the Department of Commerce has now found this in about a dozen different cases involving steel-containing goods from China. The government of China's ownership of the steel industry in China confers a subsidy when those steel prices in China are less than world prices. And on those findings, which were challenged by the Chinese at the WTO upheld most of our findings against China on these
really
state
subsidies. That's really interesting, Roger. Got to go to break now. I hope everybody stays tuned to this lively debate. In our next segment, we're going to talk about how our guests are trying to level the playing field for U.S. workers and companies. Please stay tuned to Global Reach.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616.
If you are looking for creative ways to improve your bottom line, tune in to Make Your Move with Alan and Brian Bolio. Their proven track record of helping businesses enhance their profitability will provide the basis for a forum about actionable items based on a business person's perspective. The program will be business talk, but with an economic context, so you'll know how to stay ahead of the game. Make Your Move is broadcast live every Monday afternoon at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Global Reach. This is your host, Tay Revez, and thank you so much for staying with us. During this section, we're going to look at the remedies available and specific actions that our guests have been taking to level the playing field for U.S. companies and workers. But first, Tim, I think you didn't get a chance to speak in the last session. Do you think that China is waging a trade war against the U.S., and how's it manifesting itself?
Yes, thanks, Tay. It's true. China does want to dominate as many industries as possible. And we've seen a pattern starting with basic industries like steel and others, and then moving on to more sophisticated products down the value chain, more value added. One remarkable thing is that China makes this clear in its five-year plans. It's not a secret. The government of China lays out the blueprint for how it's going to accomplish this and exactly which industries it plans to favor. And it does this in a number of ways. As we'll talk about as we go, they dump goods at artificially low prices. They provide billions of dollars of subsidies and loan guarantees. They impose trade restrictions, such as restrictions on rare earth elements and raw materials, so that U.S. manufacturers have difficulty getting those materials. And then, as Tom and Roger mentioned, they also close access to their markets so that we can't invest, or if we do, we have to turn over our technology first.
Great. Thank you. When we've been writing back and forth, there are two main sections of the trade law that provide remedies for U.S. companies, U.S. workers. Since they're always referred to by their numbers, I thought I would quickly define what they mean. One is a Section 301 petition, and that's part of the Trade Act of 1974. And what it does is it allows any U.S. petitioner to go to the government and ask it if it's perceived that there are unfair trade practices on the part of another country. They ask the U.S. government for a remedy, either to impose restrictions, to impose taxes, other action that's considered appropriate. And I know the USW and you, Tim, and you, Roger, have brought 301 petitions. The other is called a Section 421. When China was accepted into the World Trade Organization, they agreed if we experienced import surges of Chinese goods that caused market disruptions, we'd be allowed to limit the import of those goods. And that section of the agreement is called Section 421. So now what I'd like to do is have you discuss some of the specific cases that you've been involved with trying to level the playing field for our workers and for our economy. Roger, Chagrin Associates has done a lot of work on behalf of the U.S. steel industry, and in the interest of full disclosure, I have worked with Roger for some years. Anyway, could you give us a description of some of the specific cases that you've been involved in and how they've come out and why they were important?
Sure, Ms. Revez, and I think one thing that you've failed to cover in the introduction is actually probably the most important trade remedy area that we use, which is under Title VII of the trade laws, which encompasses both the countervailing duty and anti-dumping duty laws. And the U.S. government has just been using the countervailing duty laws against China since 2006. I've actually been involved in dumping cases.
Could you define countervailing duties?
Countervailing duty is to set a tariff, an amount of duty to countervail the subsidy that a government bestows to a company. And dumping is the difference in what would be considered a fair value for the good, either based on a home market price or constructing costs or surrogate values compared to the export prices to the United States. So actually, just since 2006, there's been about 25 different sets of anti-dumping and countervailing duty cases against China, and I've been involved in about half of those. And I would say about half of them have been on steel products. I've been proud to represent not only U.S. producers, but also the USW in a number of these cases. There's no difference between industry and labor when it comes to the deed for trade relief against China and preserving American business and American jobs. And we've been very successful in those cases on a wide variety of steel products, seven different kinds of steel pipe and tube products, including oil country tubular goods, which are necessary to drill for oil and gas in the United States. We're currently working on cases on steel wheels that go on U.S. trucks on our highways against imports from China.
Roger, what's the basic process that you go through? Can you do it in about 1 minute?
You do your research analysis, and you file your cases simultaneously with the Department of Commerce and the International Trade Commission. With the Department of Commerce, you tell them about the subsidy programs and your dumping allegations, and to the International Trade Commission, you give them the evidence of injury caused by the imports from China. And between the two of them, from the beginning of the case, you get initial relief in approximately 5 months, and you get a final decision in your cases within 13 months. So for the legal area, this is fairly rapid legal process.
Very interesting. Tom Conway, you've been involved not just in steel cases, but I know that the USW played a prominent role in the 421 tire case against China. Can you give us a real quick outline of what you did there and what the problem was?
Well, unfortunately, our role was more than prominent. We were the only petitioner. And we were the only petitioner because, frankly, the tire companies in the U.S. felt threatened that if they stood up and pushed back on China on this, it would affect their business in China. It would affect where they were. So the USW filed the petition on its own. And 421 is a special China surge protection. And eventually, following the process that Roger outlined, this one had to go to the president in order for him to act on it. And for the first time, President Obama, of any president, U.S. president, took an action against China and implemented a tariff on light truck and passenger tires. And that's been very helpful to the U.S. industry over the last couple of years. And the industry is recovering and is certainly doing better than it was when the tires were surging in here. But by the time we got to that, and by the time we were able to demonstrate the injury and get a president to listen to us, we had lost many plants in the U.S., and many U.S. workers had lost their jobs permanently. So while it's worked and it's been helpful, it doesn't come without damage. And a lot of times in order to demonstrate injury, it says injury or threat from injury, but in order to demonstrate injury, you've got to demonstrate that you have really been hurt. And by the time you've been hurt, you know, getting a remedy and a tariff doesn't do much for the workers who've lost their jobs.
Tom, the USW has also more recently filed a petition stating that China is engaging in illegal practices to stimulate and protect its producers of green technology, so industries of the future as well as basic industries, including solar panels,
mm-hmm.
advanced batteries, wind turbines, energy-efficient lighting, et cetera. And I know Wiley Ryan has been also involved in green energy. Why is this specifically a USW issue?
Well, if you look at the products, the supply chain that goes into renewables, glass, steel, aluminum extrusions, all the equipment to install renewable energy, and we believe renewable energy in America can have a lot to do with revitalizing manufacturing here. America has failed to build a supply chain. And so where you see wind turbines being stood up, they weren't made here. And where you see solar panels going in, they weren't made here. And so China has captured and systematically has captured all of this work in such a dramatic fashion. And all of that work, the rare earth materials, their withholding of that from the market, their subsidization of their wind programs, the subsidization of their solar programs, just is systematic in both the way that they've marketed themselves and their mercantilist practices at home and their protectionist practices at home. And so we felt compelled on behalf of all our members who touched those various products that we needed to initiate the 301, and we've had some results, and there's been a solar case now that's following this, and we believe getting people to wake up and take a look at how dire this thing is. If in fact renewables are important to the future of this country, making them is just as important.
Before I turn to Tim Brightbill, who's taking the lead on that case that the solar industry is bringing, every steel job creates how many additional jobs in the U.S. economy?
The ripple factor is about 4 to 5 jobs. So for every good-paying job you have in a basic industry in the United States, there are 4 or 5 other supporting jobs in the community, someone working in a dry cleaner, someone running a small restaurant, some small business that their entire income relies upon those good jobs in that community. And when you lose those jobs, the communities get wiped out.
Tim Brightbill, the company Solar World and the Coalition for American Solar Manufacturing in November filed an anti-dumping action. Can you tell us more about that? That's the solar case that Tom just mentioned. Can you tell us more about it, why it was necessary, who's involved?
Sure. And I do have to disagree with Tom on one thing where he mentions that if you see solar panels in the United States today, they weren't made here. A lot of them still are made here, and that's why we filed the case. There is strong U.S. Manufacturing of solar cells and solar panels, and we are trying to keep that here. Solar World is the largest U.S. manufacturer. And the reason why this case was necessary is because China particularly targeted this green energy market with massive subsidies to its own producers, individual loans of billions of dollars to Chinese solar panel manufacturers, and loan guarantees of tens of billions of dollars in some cases. We saw imports increase more than 300% from the year 2008 to the year 2010 and continue upward throughout 2011. We saw pricing collapse by 40 to 50% as a result of these dumped and subsidized imports from China. So Solar World led a coalition of manufacturers here in the United States who filed that case to try and stop the injury that's occurred. Unfortunately, there have already been thousands of workers who have been laid off, or factories that have closed. And unfortunately, this is at a time where solar power use is growing. This should be a growing market. This should be companies expanding and thousands of jobs being created instead of plant shutdowns, layoffs, shift reductions, things along those lines.
Now, Solar World, my understanding is it's German-owned, but Solar World U.S. has a plant here.
Yes, Solar World has 2 facilities, one in Oregon and one in California. Unfortunately, the manufacturing operations in California had to be shut down earlier this year, again, because of the unfair trade competition from China.
How many jobs were lost?
That was about 300 jobs lost just a few months ago.
Is the Solar World parent in Germany experiencing the same kind of unfair competition from China?
It is, and Solar World in Germany is considering what actions it may have to take as well. China when it targets an industry, it targets all of the most promising markets. Germany and Italy and other markets are very strong for solar as well, but the United States is one of the strongest current and future markets, which is why it's been a particular target for Chinese subsidies and dumping.
This movement has raised a lot of criticism and a lot of opposition also within the solar industry. The industry seems to be split in half, although I believe more individual companies are actually opposing the trade action. There is a 130-member coalition for affordable solar energy case. Who are they, and why don't they feel threatened?
Sure. Well, and actually, the coalition that we lead actually has more than 150 companies and represents more than 11,000 jobs. And the Commerce Department, when it started this case, found that these petitions did represent a majority of the U.S. industry. So we represent the majority of the industry. All I can say is there are some folks out there who want dumped and subsidized low-cost Chinese product. It's a very short-sighted view, but they want these products at the lowest price possible, and they don't care particularly if U.S. manufacturing and U.S. jobs go away as a result. So,
Tim, we've got to go to break now, but I hope everybody stays tuned in because I want to explore this a little further in the next segment, and then we're going to go look a little harder into U.S. government policy, what it is in theory and what it's doing in reality for U.S. business and for labor. So please stay tuned to Global Reach, and we'll be right back.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
No family can survive on two incomes anymore, let alone one. If you are supplementing your family's income working from home, then tune into The Cash Flow Show, Direct Sales Radio. Host Deb Bixler brings you sales tips, lead generation systems, and best business practices that guarantee direct sales success. Whether you're looking for a little extra cash or a career change, The Cash Flow Show, Direct Sales Radio will give you proven systems that will work in your home business. The Cash Flow Show. Every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616.
We're always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back. This is Tay Revez, your host for Global Reach. I'm really glad that you still stay tuned to us. Now we're going to continue our exploration of the suit on the solar energy industry, and then we're going to look at whether the U.S. government is doing all it can to protect U.S. industries or, in fact, is practicing unilateral disarmament. One of the things I thought was interesting when I looked at the opposition to the Solar World suit was that another German company seems to be the lead spokesperson in the opposition, Con Energy, which is also German-based. What's the story here?
Well, there are various people opposing this case under different causes and different names, but the main theme is a common one. As I said, they would rather have access to low-priced products, and they don't really care what happens as a result. The problem is we're already dependent on the Middle East for fossil fuels. We can't do that as a country in the green technology area, and we're at a critical point now where costs have come down year after year in the solar industry, and we're getting to the point where solar energy is a viable alternative in terms of providing energy needs for our country. And so it is particularly bad that China has chosen this point to massively send large amounts of imports here at dumped and subsidized price levels.
Let me ask you about Con Energy, because they have been fairly visible in those who are opposing the lawsuit. Isn't it true that while they have a large factory in Germany, that most of the panels that they use in North America are actually manufactured in China using their own brand?
That's quite possible. I know very little about the German market. I'm just focused on trying to keep unfairly traded product out of the United States here. And in fact, Con Energy, I think, has taken a lower role than some other folks in this case to date.
Do you think many of the members of the case are actually importing from China?
I think that is very likely the case, yes. They have suppliers. The price of solar has come down year after year, but for some, if they can get an even cheaper product, they would do that in a minute. Now, solar is still affordable, and it is going to be an energy technology of the future, but when prices fall 40-50% in 1 year, you know something's wrong in the marketplace. And it's not hard to tell what's wrong when you look at all the subsidies that these Chinese companies receive and how quickly the imports have increased here in the United States in just the last 2 to 3 years. China now, and this is a global problem, they dominate more than half of the world's market share in solar products. They had less than 10% just a few years ago. That doesn't happen by accident. It happens by government design and plan.
Okay. Roger, I want to turn now to the role that the U.S. government plays, because you've all talked about what the Chinese government has been doing, how it's not meeting its World Trade Organization obligations. But, Roger, you maintain that the U.S. government does not vigorously pursue all the remedies that are available under the laws and treaties. Is that true? And if not, why not?
It's not only true, it's an understatement. I started practicing trade law when Ronald Reagan was president. And at that time, everyone knew that Japan was manipulating the value of the yen. When I first went to Japan in 1984, it was 260 yen to the dollar. Imports from Japan were surging. We were about to lose our auto industry, our semiconductor industry, our steel industry. What did President Reagan do? Remember, even though he's a Republican, he was a former union leader. He said, I believe in free trade, but if you manipulate your currency, you're violating the first rules Adam Smith set forth about free trade among nations. So he hammered the Japanese. He imposed quotas on a number of products, including autos, steel. He did a semiconductor agreement. He took action on machine tools. And he did all that before he said to the Japanese, and if you don't allow your currency to float, I'm going to support in Congress a bill to impose 25% tariffs on all imports from Japan.
So
at the Plaza Accord in 1985, the Japanese backed down and allowed their currency to float. And after it went from 260 to 100, all of a sudden U.S. industries were competitive.
So what's happened since Reagan?
Well, what's happened is, first of all, President Clinton, a Democrat, but one from Arkansas, heavily supported by the Walton family from Walmart, probably the single biggest beneficiary of this, give away the United States to China agreement that was made in 2000. He made a bad trade agreement. President Bush didn't enforce any of the rules against China. And I hate to say this, even though he's supported by all the unions, President Obama's trade policy has been absolutely missing in action. It is amazing that 3 years into his presidency, the United States government has taken no action on currency manipulation, and that the White House has actually intervened at the end of the last Congress to prevent then the Senate from taking a vote to pass a bill passed by the House on currency manipulation, and is now trying to prevent the House from doing it. So I'm just very, very disappointed. I don't mind saying it. I think it is really pablum for the masses. Go ahead. I just want to add one thought.
Sure.
That is that this administration has said they have one trade policy, which is trying to double exports over 5 years. Well, if you took any basic economics course in college, you know that jobs are only created when exports increase greater than imports. I've had the opportunity to ask a number of White House staffers and three different cabinet members what the plan was for imports. And I've asked them, if we double exports but we triple imports, won't we lose millions of jobs? And the answer is always next question. So that just shows you there's a lack of trade policy. We have to decrease our trade deficit with China by forcing them to cease manipulating their currency or to impose extra tariffs, and in making them live up to their W-2 obligations in fighting their targeting of industry after industry. In a decade from now, we'll lose our aerospace industry because that's the latest one they're targeting. And so we need really decisive action, and we're not getting it. And I don't care whether it comes from a Democrat or a Republican. I'm agnostic. I really believe in strong leadership for American workers, regardless of the party affiliation. And we're simply not getting it.
Well, I always thought when Ross Perot talked about the giant sucking sound of the North American Free Trade Agreement, I always thought that the problem was more going to be China and that it was Walmart who was holding the vacuum cleaner.
And that's right. He just picked out the wrong targets, and maybe it was a few years
okay.
before his time.
Tim Brightbill, you want to pick up on this?
Sure.
Why doesn't the U.S. pursue a more vigorous policy?
Well, there are many reasons why. I think one concern is that there are many U.S. Industries that could bring these kind of cases that could help pressure the U.S. government, and instead they want to try and get access to the Chinese market, and they're concerned that if they speak up or defend our trade rights, that China will retaliate against them. So it's a fundamental problem, but when you're trying to access a market for a billion people and you know you can be cut off if you say the wrong thing or take action against China's illegal trade practices, that is a huge problem. And you see that not only in the U.S. industry, you see that globally as well. Roger talked earlier about China's 10-year anniversary of joining the World Trade Organization. While the current round of negotiations have failed and come to a standstill, and one reason for that is that other countries don't want to open their markets to China any further while China remains so closed to industries or is able to retaliate against industries that speak up for their own behalf. So those are serious problems that U.S. trade policy has just not addressed and has not been courageous enough to address.
Now, you talked about what industries are willing to do in their fear. What about the U.S. government? Is it also because we have such a complex financial, economic, security relationship with China? I mean, how much of our debt does China actually own?
It's a staggering amount of money, and that, I'm sure that is a concern for our policymakers. But even with those concerns, there is much more that this administration could do and that Congress could do in terms of opening markets and enforcing our laws. There are basic steps that could be taken to get China to open its markets to government procurement is just one area where many countries agree that their governments will buy from a variety of different countries. China has that all completely closed. And China, as Tom mentioned, has a system of state-owned enterprises that are just extensions of the government that come to dominate entire industries, subsidize them, and control them. And if the United States wants to look for another step to take, addressing these state-owned enterprises and what happens when they begin to expand abroad and to operate on a non-commercial basis, that is a critical issue that the United States needs to face up to.
Well, we have to go to break now. When we come back, I want Tom to chime in and tell us what you think needs to be done, and then let's look at some of the broader picture. You're listening to Global Reach. Please stay tuned in. This debate is far from finished, and we really want to know what you, as the listener, can do as well. Thanks for listening to Global Reach.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business. Entrepreneurial Insights is your weekly excursion into the world of business ownership. Presented by Sunbelt Business Brokers, the leading business brokerage and intermediary firm in the world, Entrepreneurial Insights will examine critical issues that impact both existing and prospective business owners. If you own or want to own a small business, listen for Entrepreneurial Insights with John Davies, Pino Bocanello, and Matt Ottaway, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Global Reach. This is your host, Tay Revez. We are discussing U.S.-China trade and whether China's waging a trade war against the U.S. and why the U.S. doesn't do all it can to protect industry and jobs. In other words, why our guests seem to think that the U.S. is practicing unilateral disarmament. Now, before we left, Tim and Roger were both giving us prescriptions that they felt the U.S. should be taking. Tom, from your perspective, from the steelworkers' perspective, what should the U.S. be doing?
Look, I think the U.S. has got itself into a lot of bad deals, and I don't know how they can step out. And I think the U.S. also intermingles its foreign policy and its trade policy, and they are in some ways one and the same. And it's easy to try and solve a foreign relations problem by giving away American jobs. And regardless of what administration has been in place, I think we've struggled with that for so long. But America needs to understand that this has been the biggest shell game that has ever been played on the American public. And, you know, Tim said earlier, all the opposition to this thing, this is very simple. You just follow the money, and you understand why the opposition is there. And so you know, we've heard in the last, during this holiday season, we had Black Friday, Cyber Monday, and the three big sales, and they say retail sales seem to be rebounding a little bit, and the consumer is spending a little bit. But if you look at it, they're spending on electronics, they're spending on apparel, and they're spending on toys. And America is buying imported goods and not making them. And that cycle now has been going on for 30 years.
Okay,
I mean,
so
And our businesses have bought into the idea that, well, if we give Americans low-cost consumer goods, that'll offset their losing their jobs. And that's a fallacy, and you can't do it forever. And we are at the end of that runway, and America needs to come to terms with China. And if and the appeasers who say, well, China owns our debt, we can't be too loud with them, we can't push back too much. If you don't do it now, do you think you'll be able to do it in 10 years? China cheats, and we need to face them in that fashion and deal with them in a, from a position of strength while we have a market that we can deal with.
So one sentence each. What is one specific thing you want the president to do? What is one specific thing you want from Congress?
There is currently a bill that's been passed in the Senate on currency, that China's currency needs to be fixed. There is a bill that's been passed by a majority in the House, but Speaker Boehner won't bring it up for a vote. But a majority, a bipartisan majority in the House, has approved the China currency bill. If Boehner was smart, he would pass it, vote it, put it on the president's desk, and force something to happen on Chinese currency. That could happen tomorrow, and it should.
Okay. Roger, you said that there are remedies that can be taken under the WTO treaty, but the U.S. isn't taking them.
Oh.
In a couple of sentences or three, what can the U.S. do?
First, as to what all of the listeners to this program should be doing with the jobs crisis we have in this country, a jobs crisis that no one living today, because we're all born after the Great Depression, has ever seen before. I mean, we have 17% real unemployment in this country. Those people should be protesting in the streets for a trade policy with China. China has alone the nearly $300 billion trade deficit. Every single month, it reaches a new monthly high, almost $30 billion trade deficit with China in just the month of October. People should say enough is enough. They ought to open up their windows and scream out to the White House and all the high-paid lobbyists that have been hired by the communist government of China. I mean, it's outrageous. It's a celebration and part of our democracy. Can you imagine if there were 17% unemployment in China, that the U.S. government could hire all the top ex-officials of the Chinese government to be lobbyists for the U.S. government?
So
that's what the Chinese government is doing. They have literally all of the top lobbyists in Washington on their payroll to prevent the U.S. government and the U.S. Congress from taking action. So we need to pass the currency bill that Tom talked about, but we also need to have this USTR file case after case. As Tim Breitbill mentioned earlier, China puts out a five-year plan. They put out the roadmap saying these are the seven or eight industries that we're going to support to dominate world commerce. That's a violation of the WTO. They do import substitution repeatedly to say we're not going to import airplanes from the United States and from Europe. We're going to build our own industry to prevent having to import these products. So they are engaged in massive violations of the WTO. And instead of filing one case every 2 years, USTR should be filing 10 cases per year at the WTO against China.
So you're telling us that we now need Occupy K Street and Occupy the U.S. Trade Representative.
Absolutely.
Okay. Tim Breitbill.
Sure.
What are your suggestions? What would you, if you're going to have, if you're going to wave your magic wand or your magic legal brief, what would you have the president do? What would you have Congress do? What should our listeners do?
Sure. Well, our listeners, our individuals, should let Congress know that there's no more important issue than trade and jobs. For businesses, the best thing they can do is to help identify the trade barriers in China and in other countries like Russia and Brazil, because once we know how businesses are suffering, There are ways to address those problems under the trade laws or in our trade agreements. The president and the administration have to be more aggressive on China. They need to file more WTO cases with our trading partners. That strengthens our hand when they do that. And then Congress, I think, needs to address trade enforcement. There's a great bill by Senator Wyden called the Enforce Act, which ensures that once we win a trade case, that U.S. companies and industries actually get relief rather than China just finding a way around those trade orders. So those are four things that folks can do to address the problem.
Do you want to add anything, Tom?
Look, I think we've identified it well, and I think this really just needs to be an honest discussion within the country about what's going on. And, you know, Roger said early in this segment that many multinational corporations moved from America. In the last decade, America's lost 55, 60,000 factories, many, many, many of them to China. So where there's the money that people save by going to China and getting products made in that condition and then bring it back home to this market, we need to deal with that. We can't allow it to go on. But the problem is a lot of that money makes its way to campaign coffers and to finance this. So many of the people who are offshoring America are also financing campaigns, and all these things are linked together, and we need to look at them clear-eyed and straightforward.
I know we're getting to the end of our show, but did I just hear you say we need public financing of election campaigns?
Well, we need something different than what we have, because what we have is corrupting our nation.
We need to make sure that the average American worker has to understand that they need to be more vocal because they don't have the money to finance the campaign, so they have to participate in the democratic process to make sure their voice is heard, because they're getting beat every day in Washington by the big campaign contributions and the big lobbyists who are acting on behalf of not labor unions, not average workers, but on behalf of multinational companies and Wall Street. And as Tim also just mentioned, you know, even after we win these cases, China actually believes it's okay for their government to tolerate people who criminally associate in enterprises with the sole purpose of fraudulently evading duties by transshipping products through other countries and claiming that their products are those other countries. And we've informed the U.S. government about who these companies are, and the government of China doesn't even shut them down. So they actually allow criminal enterprises to exist in their country with tacit government approval. It's really outrageous.
So let me ask you, these are all really complex issues, and we've covered a lot of ground. Are there any websites that explain these issues very simply? And if you'll mention them, I will post them on the Global Reach SBI website.
We have one called the Alliance for American Manufacturing.
Who's speaking?
Tom Conway.
Okay.
And it's a joint labor management coalition of the United Steelworkers and major U.S.-based employers who deal with this China trade issue on a daily basis and are trying to present ourselves as an alternative to some of the tactics of the Chamber of Commerce and to the National Association of Manufacturers. So if you look up at AAM.org, you're going to find the resources and the discussions and the how-to help instructions you'll need to get yourself involved in this.
Well, I will post that web link on the GlobalReach-SBI website so people will be able to find it. I want to thank my three guests, Roger Chagrin, Timothy Brightbill, and Tom Conway, for a really stimulating, controversial discussion. And thank you all for tuning into Global Reach. And please come back next week, Global Reach on the Voice America Network. And this is your host, Tay Revez. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you for listening to Global Reach with Tay Revez. Please join us again next Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a great week.